on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, January 7th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk, and we are now one full week into the new year, and markets and geopolitics are certainly moving, and we will unpack it all during this hour. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective each and every weekday is to help you become a better investor, giving you perspective and data that you can take back to your own situation and make better decisions with your money. And in today's environment, you need a lot of that. You need a lot of data. You need a lot of perspective because we're in uncharted territory. And I knew this year would be more volatile than last year, but I was thinking more about markets being more volatile, and I still think that's going to be the case. But geopolitics clearly is a lot more volatile. Clearly, President Trump is accelerating his agenda with the fear that the midterms will be lost and he'll have to cede some control to Congress. And so that is, I think, really what's driving all of this. And, you know, it's not just Venezuela. What it looks like to be next will be Iran. We're already moving troops over there. So there's a lot to unpack. And as I always say, these are just the realities of the situation. And you know, the markets don't care about what you think or what I think or what we hope the world should be. It only matters about what the world is. And we are in a world that is very contentious. And there are a lot of problems that continue to arise and are likely to impact flows of capital into various asset classes. And we're already seeing that with precious metals in a big way, harder assets like copper and aluminum and so many other metals that are out there. And obviously flows of capital towards different equity exchanges, fixed income markets, et cetera. And so that's what we're really going to continue to update you throughout this year. This is going to be one of the most insane years I think we have seen in many, many decades. And we're already seeing that one week in. So buckle up. And we are here to help you in every way we possibly can. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hi, this is Brett Schretz, California. And I wanted to ask you guys your expertise on Procter & Gamble. I've owned it for like 10 years. I wanted to add some more to it, these values. I don't know if it's a falling knife or what's your analysis on it. I'm 59 years old. I wanted to just keep this in as a reliable long-term type stock. If you think it's a good move on that one, if you can give me your analysis on it, I'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Procter & Gamble, I don't think I have to tell anybody what Procter & Gamble does. And this is a stock that is clearly in a long downtrend, down 23% from its 52-week high. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but for a name like Procter & Gamble, it definitely is. And that's because earnings expectations for this year and next year continue to come down. It's a very slow growth name, and it's trading at still about 20 times forward-looking earnings, which frankly is not cheap for a name that isn't growing. And I always say in an inflationary environment, there are certain sectors that tend to not do very well. And consumer staples is usually one of them. Why? Because when inflation goes up, the raw materials that go into creating those products goes up and they eat a lot of that cost. And then on top of that, they need to get their products to the end market, to stores, et cetera. And that usually goes up as well. Now, it's still certainly a solid business, but growth is certainly slowing, and I don't think it should trade at this type of multiple going forward. And I think it's going to continue to go lower. Now, is it cheap enough for me to buy? No, because it is not a falling knife. It is a falling knife, and I do not want to try to catch that. I think there's still a lot more potential downside to go. For example, in 2018, it traded about 11 times enterprise value to EBITDA. Right now, it's about 15 times. So I think there's still another 20 to 30% down from here. I would want to wait till it gets below $100 per share. And honestly, I think it's headed there. Now, I've said this before. I don't love these classic brands that everybody knows, from your General Mills and your Kellogg's and your Heinz ketchup and Procter and Gamble. I just think there's far, 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 far better places to put your money than these consumer staples, that most of them are in strong downtrends. They're very capital intensive businesses. Obviously, with geopolitics coming undone, are there going to be embargoes on Procter & Gamble products going into unfriendly countries like a Russia, like a China, et cetera? That's a big question. Geopolitics is playing into things like that. And so while everyone knows these brands, I don't think they're very good investments at all, especially those that have a lot of debt. Now, the saving grace for Procter & Gamble is that they don't have a lot of debt. Some of those other names that I talked about do have a lot of debt. You know, Procter & Gamble only has about $30 billion in debt, free cash flow about $15 billion, which is still a good ratio, and they're still fine. Now, their margins are still high, but once again, their profitability continues to go down. And so I wouldn't buy it yet. Like I said, I think there's still more downside to go from a valuation perspective. And yeah, I got to zoom out to a monthly chart before I get to a level that gets me excited. Yeah, sub 100, 95 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up. Now it's at 138. So I think there's still much more downside to go for Procter & Gamble. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it. And my main focus point is about the 2026 Great Rotation. We're going to look at every sector in the market and kind of go over the pros and the cons, what could drive it for 2026, and the interesting rotation that happened kind of near the end of the year, which was old economy stocks started to outperform the cyclical names compared to the Mag 7. And so is this a solid rotation or just a head fake? So we'll dig into that story. In addition, we'll touch on a few other topics. One is the condo market. The condo market is not looking so hot, and that usually pertains to the health of the broader housing market. So we'll look at those numbers. And then the car market, the auto market. What are automakers expecting for the year ahead? And then if we have time, who are the winners and losers from the tariff regime, as well as the One Big Beautiful Bill? So we'll get into that data as well. And of course, most importantly, will be your live calls, both recorded. We have voice bank calls on portfolio management and Klarna. And then your live calls. Your live calls are always number one. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We'll also hit on some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. But we're heading into a quick break. And please remember that you can call anytime. Leave your question on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I'll be talking about today's market activity in the next segment.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a look at the market today. It started off as a green day, but closed in the red overall. Large cap growth did eke out slight gain. You saw the NASDAQ up 0.16% on the day. The S&P lost about a third of 1%, closing near the lows on the day. There was a lot of economic news that came out really around jobs. You had the December ADP number, which was up 41,000 month over month, but expectations were 47,000. So missed expectations slightly. November revised to negative 29,000 from negative 32,000. So a bit better, but still you are having a labor market that continues to slow. And really that is summed up in the JOLTS data, the job openings and labor data. The expectations were for 7.7 million jobs available and posted. And the November number, which it is very lagged, but still it's a number that exists, was 7.14 million. So a drastic miss on that side. So it just shows you the jobs market continues to decline. Rate of job openings declined 4.3% month over month. So clearly not good. The hiring rate fell to 3.2% from 3.4%. And separation rate was unchanged, about 3.2%. Layoffs and discharge rate little changed at 1.1%. So what you can see here is it continues to be a market where there's not a lot of people getting fired, but job creation is poor. And the job creation that is happening is really in the non-cyclical sectors. Education and health services, that was the biggest gain. Leisure and hospitality up 24,000, second largest. Trade and transportation and utilities up 11,000, and financial services up 6,000. So that's where the gains were. But job losses in professional and business services, is that partly AI driven? That's a big question. As well as information technology down 12,000 and manufacturing down 5,000. So the whole tariffs are going to reshore manufacturing. That's not happening, or it's going to bring jobs home. That's not happening because manufacturing continues to lose jobs month over month. And in fact, you're now getting year over year declines in blue collar workers. And so clearly that side of the economy continues to struggle, at least on the labor side, What else did you have here? Your treasuries were mixed. The curve was flattening a bit, which is obviously not the best sign. Yields declined 3 to 4 basis points at the back end. Dollar index was up 0.1%. Gold finished down 0.8%. Silver ended down 4.2%. Bitcoin was down 1.9%. And WTI finished down 2%. Continue to monitor that evolving situation in Venezuela. So you're getting a little bit of pullback today in some of those precious metals, but a lot of them rallied kind of later in the day and closed near the highs of the day, as opposed to the broader market closed near the lows of the day. When it came to individual names, you definitely saw some strength out of NVIDIA up 1%, Google up 2.4%, Microsoft up 1%, but Meta down nearly 2% on the day. And you continue to see some red. Finance space certainly struggled, especially because it looks like President Trump is trying to ban some of the private equity firms from owning single family homes. So certainly that hit the Blackstones of the world. Health did okay, but anything around manufacturing and industrials didn't do so hot. Caterpillar up down 4% on the day. GE Vernova down 3.5% on the day. So very interesting day. A lot of tech names certainly were in the red. KLA Tencor down 2.5%. Texas Instruments down 3%. So more red than green on the day, even though the NASDAQ eked out a gain. So that was the market. And let's pivot back to an InvestTalk voicemail question right now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Frank from Los Angeles. I have a question about portfolio management. I'm having a hard time figuring out the right allocation across equity, treasuries, and corporate bonds, especially given the current macro environment. I was thinking about allocating 50% to treasury bond ETFs and the rest to just to value stocks, but I'm starting to think that I should probably allocate also something to corporate bonds, especially given how sticky inflation is. I'm 35 years old, and I consider myself a value-oriented investor. Especially in this environment, I don't think it makes sense to take much risk. Given this, what would be the ideal split across asset classes for somebody my age? Thank you very much, and I'll be listening on the show.
Well, the fact that you're in your 30s, that's a far too conservative portfolio, 50% in bonds, maybe even more in corporates. For the number one, for cash-like holdings, I'm okay with treasuries. Short-term treasuries, we use that as a cash alternative. But as a longer-term investment, no, you don't want to be in treasuries, especially any long-duration treasuries, 10 years, 30 years, et cetera. So your bond, main bond exposure should be in corporates. Now, it shouldn't be a large percentage of your portfolio, especially if you're an aggressive investor. It should be probably sub 20% of your overall portfolio. The rest should be equities. And I would lean on the value side of the market. And you're starting to see that side start to outperform once again. So hopefully that gave you a little perspective, and feel free to schedule a portfolio review with me. Now, we're going to do a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
It's a new year. 2026 is here, and so is Justin Klein. He's taking your finance and investment questions anytime. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Good day there, Luke and Justin. Longtime listener of your show here from the Midwest. Thank you guys for everything you teach us. Quick question. In my portfolio, I have very low, almost no percentage of energy in it. I've been looking here at a stock, EQNR is a ticker symbol, or also a fund, an ETF, ET. I was wondering if either one of them would be good selections, and if that stock might be a better selection than the ETF would be to put in it. Just wondering if those would be good choices, or if I should keep on looking. Thank you for your thoughts and help. I look forward to hearing it on the show. Happy holidays.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And you're looking at two names that have some attractiveness to them, but they have their own drawbacks. And we'll dig into that a second. But, you know, having a large exposure to the energy space, especially oil, I don't think that's really an issue. I think there's the upside in oil prices in the near term because of geopolitical instability. But, you know, I just don't see oil as a great place to be in the medium to long term. Why? Because, you know, we're just able to, with technology, is able to find a lot of oil, and it's easy to transport around the world generally, as long as supply lines are open. Now, that's the big question around it in the near term. But long term, I don't see a structural undersupply in oil. But natural gas is really the swing fuel now, especially as we electrify so much of our auto fleet with electric vehicles, but also the demand for data centers and the like. And so, you know, ET is, these are two very different companies. Equinor is, EQNR is out of Norway, and it's the government-sponsored oil company. And they're more tied into the geopolitical instability Brent crude, right? So Brent crude goes up because of problems in Europe and the Middle East. You know, it's going to do much, much better. So it's going to be more sensitive to oil prices. Whereas energy transfer, it has a lot of, is a high yield. It is a consistent performer, but it has a ton of debt. And that's the risk here, is that if interest rates go up, suddenly the cost of capital goes up. And that could, you know, that's kind of the bigger risk. And you don't have the upside of the move in natural gas and oil prices like you do with Equinor. And so it just kind of depends on what exposure you want. I would say energy transfer is going to be less volatile with some correlation to interest rates and bond prices in general, because it's kind of bond-like. It's kind of a high-yield bond, really, is what it is, if you're thinking of it that way and clipping that 8% yield. But then Equinor is going to have, once again, more upside and downside to oil prices. I like both, but for different reasons. So adding maybe both makes sense, but I wouldn't go overboard with the energy space at the current time. Thanks for the call. Now let's answer a YouTube comment question that came in. It says, what about the big four banks that failed on Friday due to the price of silver? I, you know, I think this is a great question. A lot of people keep talking about this, and there's a lot of fear mongering out there. And that's what this kind of is talking about. Oh, this, you know, they're going to have this big crash. It's abundantly clear. Anybody who's not is paying attention knows that 08 is not going to happen again, at least in that particular way. Okay. The risk in markets is not down, it's up. It's being underexposed to risk assets. It's clear, whether that is the repo crisis in 2019, whether that's COVID in 2020, whether that's the Silicon Valley bank crisis in, was that 2023? And then most recently, the Fed coming in there and buying treasuries, T-bills, excuse me. Whatever it is, this is the MO of governments. They're going to do what it takes to keep the system inflating, because you see with Doge, you see with everything, nothing stops this train, as Lynn Alden once said. They're going to continue to spend, whether it's the right, whether it's left, it does not matter. And so if a bank gets in trouble, they will help them. They will solve the problem. Now, the release valve are precious metals, is the dollar, right? The dollar declining. There are release valves to this. And that's why you continue to see gold and silver go up, because they are not going to solve the debt situation. They're going to inflate away the debt, just like every other government in history has done. Every government who can control their own currency has never defaulted on their debt. And it's not politically expedient to cut spending, because it most likely causes a recession. And no leadership wants to see a recession under their watch. And so that's why they continue to spend. And so you need to ignore these things. You're going to see these fear mongerings. Everything's going to crash. No, the risk is inflation, not deflation. 08 was deflation. Banks failing is deflation. That's not what's going to happen here. It is the opposite. It is an inflationary environment. It's the debasement trade. And that's how you have to look at markets today. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this story. The yield curve uninversion. The 10-year treasury yield is finally pushing comfortably above the two-year yield. We'll explain why this normalization is healthy, but often precedes a mid-cycle slowdown. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started. I've got something you need to check out. Now there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's clickup.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
Now with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, as we closed 2025, the old economy stocks started to outperform the new economy stocks. The question is, was that a flash in the pan or an enduring trend? So we're going to look at all the different sectors and what's likely to drive performance for this year. And at the end, they'll tell you what I think. Now, let's start off with communication services. And this is really all about the evolution of AI. It's the most important driver in this space, especially where AI can be applied, and that is in the gaming industry. And think of all the time it takes to get a game to market and all the programmers necessary. Well, AI is going to improve that development and probably improve margins for the video game industry in a big, big way. So I think that's probably the best theme within that sector overall. The headwinds is really going to be those big telecom companies. Think of the AT&T and Verizons of the world. Higher long-term interest rates are weighing on that, as well as just the mature market and obviously the consumer struggling as well. So in the technology space, so close cousin to the communications industry, and really semiconductors are the name of the game here. Anything that's the picks and shovels around AI, graphics processors, high-speed memory, data centers, all of that, this is continues to be where the demand will be. And the question is, how much is really priced into the sector and different companies, and will that come to fruition in that magnitude is a big question. That's why I think there's a lot of risk as well as a lot of opportunity in the tech space. And the bad side of tech is really software. We've talked about the cloud companies, anything that was CRM type of businesses like a Salesforce. Those could be usurped by AI and make it so you don't really need to pay hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month for this software that AI can build custom for you. And like I said, we're doing that internally here at KPP. And then industrials, I think that's where there's a lot of opportunity around heavy electrical equipment producers, anything around electrification of data centers, gas turbines, et cetera. I think that will continue to do well as OEM manufacturing around things like jet airplanes, all of that. And so I think that's going to be an interesting space for 2026, even though the broader manufacturing industry is slowing, especially around building products because the housing market is waning a bit. On the utility side, utility sector has been struggling recently. We're underweighted. I think that's because of longer-term interest rates. So the battle here between longer-term interest rates and the demand side increasing due to data center buildouts, et cetera. And so, the problem is that that's only the electric utilities, independent power producers. And so if you're buying the utility sector as a whole, you're getting water companies, gas companies, et cetera, that won't necessarily benefit from these trends. And frankly, only specific companies, specific utilities in certain regions are really benefiting from the AI trend. So you have to be very selective within that space. Then there's energy, as I talked a little bit earlier. I don't see this as a great place to invest unless you're investing around uranium, if you call that energy. Some people call it energy. Some people call it uranium. It depends how it's classified. Call it basic materials or energy. But really, it's all about natural gas, the demand for natural gas. I think that still remains where the opportunities are. Oil field services as well, to really bring on more and more gas supply. I think that should continue to be a good place to be. Material sector, gold and silver, copper, obviously those trends I think are durable. Sure, there's going to be volatility. You probably get a considerable pullback at some point this year, but could be even from much higher prices than here. So I still think that is one of the best sectors to invest in for 2026. In the financial space, it's definitely a stock picker's market. I think certain aspects, think of white collar work, think of investment companies, as well as insurance companies, trust title companies, things like that, that AI is really going to make those workforces a lot more efficient. It's already happening here internally for us at KPP Financial. And I see this as a big, big opportunity for a lot of companies within the finance realm. And so, but there's headwinds. I think the commercial banks, especially those smaller commercial banks, the regional banks, if high rates go up on the long end, that could hurt them as well. So I think you definitely have to be choosy within the finance sector. And then consumer discretionary, you know, there's the tariff issue. It looks like SCOTUS will shoot down the tariffs as unconstitutional. Now, President Trump has been known to kind of try to get around that, and he'll probably go back at it from a different angle, and it'll probably go back to the Supreme Court, et cetera. But certainly that is some volatility that could play in 2026. But I think the best opportunities are in the discount retailers. Shoppers are becoming more value-oriented, bargain hunting, especially with the labor market continue to slow. But I still think there's a lot of value and opportunity within those areas. So that's that sector. Real estate, I think there's still a lot of risk around office. I still think that is an area that's been overbuilt. To me, the best opportunity is going to be around senior housing. So you have to be very selective within the REIT space, especially if interest rates go up, because that does tend to weigh on the REIT sector. And then healthcare is really strong right now. And a big reason for that is what is called the most favored nation rule. So remember the whole rhetoric around that we spend the most on drugs and our drug prices are a lot higher than the rest of the world. Well, what's happened here from the Trump administration is they've actually pressured the drug companies not to lower drug prices here in a material way, but to increase prices abroad. And overall, that's going to be good for them because their average price is going up. Now, it's bad for the countries around the world who were paying less, but it's in the eyes of the Trump administration that's more aligned with, you know, our prices. And for them, they feel like that's a win. And so that's been a positive for drug companies. And then obviously the potential for AI to help with things like gene therapy and complex drugs, bringing them to market and getting them approved. And so I think there's still a lot of opportunity in healthcare. And then lastly, consumer staples. Consumer staples, I don't think is going to be a great place to be overall. Why? Because as I said before, with Procter & Gamble, just a lot of those companies have a lot of debt. They're exposed to an inflationary environment. And I think geopolitics could potentially cause problems as well. So that's the broad overview of the, I think they're going over 11 sectors. And I do think that the shift in the economy and the cyclical names as we exited the year is durable. And I would continue to move money into that area and away from the bits in the sky, shall we say. Now let's play another listener, actually going into a live call. And Tara is in San Jose looking at Franco, Nevada.
Oh, hi. Yeah, so I picked up Franco, Nevada a couple of years back when the gold prices were down. Mm-hmm. And my investment thesis was twofold, like one, investing in gold and some other precious metals, as well as investing in the company. So as of now, I am in a profit, but I want to check if this is a good time to sell, because on the company front, the investment thesis still holds true. It's a good company. I would like to hold it long term if possible, but if it's a good time to take profit and get in back again after some time. I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, long term, we still remain very bullish on gold and silver. Now, it's a sector that a 20% drop in the price, in especially these gold miners or related names, is not uncommon. So right now it's at 217. Could this pull back to, you know, the 180, 160 range? Would not shock me. Okay. So you have to be prepared for that type of volatility, even though it's still in that longer term uptrend. Now we own Franco Nevada. We've owned it for a long time. We bought it sub $100 per share. Right now it's at 217. So we're up a lot as well. So we still really like the name. So it's to have an all-time high in earnings of $7.25 this year. And it's a $217 stock. Now, that might seem expensive, but this is not your typical gold miner. This is actually a streamer, meaning what they do is they go and buy equity stakes in a lot of different mines around the world, and they work with the actual miners to help finance that. And that kind of lowers the risk of the mining company of bringing those mines online. But it's a really great, consistent business, and they get certain percentage of the revenue of that comes out of those mines. And so that's why they continue to do well. We own it. We continue to hold it. I see no reason to get out of Franco Nevada. The bigger question is, how much gold and silver exposure do you have of your overall portfolio? You know, if it's getting too hefty, maybe over 30% of your portfolio, maybe that's a reason to trim right now. But unless that's the case, I see no reason to sell Franco Nevada.
All right, great. Thank you. Yeah, it's about like 5-7% at most.
Is that all of your gold and silver exposure or just this name?
Yeah. No, it's all like...
Okay. Yeah, so you're underexposed to gold and silver. You should have probably triple that for most likely exposure. So I'd be looking to find other names. Maybe I wouldn't buy more Franco Nevada, but I would probably go and have a watch list for other names within the space that I would buy on a pullback.
All right. Great. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Let's go play another listener question now.
Hey, guys. I opened a starter position in Signet Jewelers today. I'm curious what you guys think of the fundamentals and the technical setup, and if it's something that's possibly worth adding to or perhaps maybe just keeping it as a small position. Thank you much.
Signet Jewelers engaged the retail of diamond jewelry, and I think this is an interesting one because there's some headwinds to it as well as some tailwinds. So the headwinds are diamond prices are plummeting, especially as more and more people are adopting lab-grown diamonds that are much cheaper. You don't have to deal with a blood diamond on your hands or anything like that. And so that's bringing prices down generally for jewelry. And so, you know, their margins are, let's see, what are their margins? 8% operating margins are still higher than they were kind of pre-COVID. But they have come down from their high around 11%. Now it's around 8%. But the tailwind is gold, right? Gold and silver prices. People want to own kind of, if you're going to buy gold and silver, might as well, you know, buy a necklace or buy a bracelet or buy some earrings or whatever, right? And so I think that's still overall a positive. They did have a good amount of debt for a while, and I think they've whittled that down. Yeah, it was about $2.6 billion in 2020. Now it's down to $858 million. And so that they've kind of resolved that. The return equity, though, isn't really that intriguing. It's down around 8%. And pre-COVID, it was closer to around 15%. And so I don't love the kind of change in the profitability profile of the name. And that's what worries me overall. And then if you look at a chart, you know, it's gone kind of nowhere since the end of 2021. So you're not really getting much. You're getting a 1.4% dividend yield. You're not getting a ton of earnings growth, frankly. Earnings in 2022 was $12.27. In 2025, they're nearly $9, supposed to earn $9.30 this year and $10.54 next year. So it looks cheap on a PE multiple basis, but that's because it's not really growing. And so if people are moving away once again from buying your big expensive diamonds and more towards lab grown diamonds and, you know, just simple gold and silver chains, et cetera, you know, I don't think their business is going to do too hot. So, you know, I don't hate it, but I think there's a lot better opportunities out there in the market than Signet. SIG is the symbol. Now let's pivot over. And do we have any other calls? Oh, we do. Okay. Let's do one more caller.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Matt from South Florida. Wanted to call to get your opinion on Paymetrics, ticker symbol PAY. These guys compete with companies like ACI Worldwide and Repay. Looking to bolster my payments holdings beyond companies like PayPal to more specific companies. Again, ticker symbol PAY. Looking for your opinion on a 3 to 5 year hold. Thank you.
All right, looking at Paymentus Holdings, PAY is the symbol. And this is an interesting one. It went public back in 2021 when money was cheap and everyone was trying to buy these high-flying growth names. And this is a name that certainly is growing in a material way. If you look at revenue growth last quarter, it was, 34%. However, that's down considerably from end of 2024 when it was growing 56% in the fourth quarter of 2024. So growth is slowing there. Earnings up 49% last year, supposed to be up only 16% this year. And that's kind of the worry here. And I think that's why the momentum certainly has slowed. So this bottomed in 2023 around $7. And then it's recently hit a high around $40. But it's chopping in this range between 30 and 40. And frankly, I think the momentum is waning in a big, big way. And then if you look at the multiples that it's trading at, it's pretty expensive. Enterprise value around 32. Now, forward looking is around 20. They don't have much debt, which is good, but the free cash flow is on only $100 million, which is a very, very low free cash flow yield. Return on equity is only 11%. And if you're looking on forward-looking earnings of 76 cents, it's a $30 stock. So you're talking about a 40 times forward-looking earnings. And I just don't think that this company is worth it. I don't like the momentum, which is, once again, continuing to wane. Relative strength now is only 38. So over the past year, it's just been a bit of a dog, especially compared to the broader market. You're not getting a dividend. The best thing you can say about it is it has no debt. But yeah, not a name that I would be buying. I think you have much better opportunities with your capital. That was Paymentus. P-A-Y is the symbol. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you need to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about ticker symbol KLAR. Klarna Group. It is a buy now, pay over time platform that IPO'd a few months ago. And I'm interested in that market. I think a lot of these tech companies are implementing them with the amount of debt, the prices going up. I find it to be a good business. And would like to get your opinion on Klarna to see if it's a good buy to kind of dip my toes into right now. I would love to hear what you guys think. Thank you.
Well, first off, Klarna is a recent IPO, and I tend to not like those. It IPO'd in September and around $50 per share, and it's been in decline ever since. So the current trend is not great. Now sitting around $31 and change. And I'm not sure what the lockup period is, but typically it's 6 months. We're not even there yet. And that's usually when more insiders can kind of sell their shares and increase the amount of shares in the float, and that usually pushes prices down. So not a name that I would, not a setup that I really like, even outside of what the business looks like. And they're supposed to earn 51 cents this year on a $31 stock. That's 60 times forward-looking earnings, and growth is slow. In fact, earnings growth is actually negative as of lately. And remember, this is still a new type of business, and they're actually losing money as of the last quarter. They lost 13 cents per share. And so this is far. Actually, I think this is a good short, to be honest with you. I hate this business. I think it's a terrible business. Yes, there's demand. But, you know, if I'm giving away dollars for 90 cents, I'm going to have a lot of demand. Right. And so it's just not a good business. And so I would stay far, far away from this. It's a bad business to be in, even if there's high demand. There's high demand because consumers love it because it's effectively a free loan, but there's a lot of defaults and it's just really bad for shareholders. So 100% pass on Klarna. Now, lastly, let's talk about the condo market. In September and October, condo prices fell 1.9% from a year earlier, the biggest decline since 2012. Really driven by higher HOAs, insurance premiums, and maintenance costs. And it's really giving a lot of buyers a pause. And now more than 1 in 10 condos had a lower estimated value in November than their most recent sales price, according to Zillow. And in 9 metro areas, it's far worse. More than 25% of condos were estimated to be worth less than their most recent sale price. And this is in areas like Austin, Texas, and Austin and San Antonio, Texas. There's a glut of supply there. Florida markets like Cape Coral, Miami, et cetera, they're having insurance costs and hurricane risks that are really pushing buyers back. And in San Francisco and Portland, prices just reflect a decline in in demand for downtown districts. And so since the pandemic, and so there's just a lot weighing on the condo market. In November, single family homes continue to hold their value generally. Only 4.5% of single family homes were estimated to be worth less than their sale price, mainly because they don't really have that HOA risk, nearly as much insurance risk because of their locations, and usually away from major flooding or any problems like that. And so, you know, buyers are just balking at the high cost of borrowing money, the high cost of insurance, especially after the Surfside condo collapse in Florida in 2021 that killed 98 people. Lenders are pulling back in a big, big way. A lot of these HOAs don't have enough money in their coffers to cover a lot of the maintenance. And so they just can't be lent on. And so this is really, I think, the start of the correction. Usually how the condo market goes, it eventually feeds into the single family market. And I think this is the year where that will happen. I do think generally for the country, we'll see a decline in prices, not in a dramatic way, not in 08, it's not 08, but you know, low to mid single digit decline in housing prices in general, I think is the offing for 2026. And the weakness in the condo market is a signal for that. Well, I'm Justin Klein. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, did you keep that condo that you have, that home that you have, that you maybe are thinking about selling, that rental, et cetera? These are things that we talk about on our free portfolio reviews. What about your portfolio strategy? Are you overweight treasuries, for example? Should you be more in corporates? Should you be more in value stocks or harder assets? Or maybe you don't have enough tech. Who knows? These are all things that we go over in our no-cost portfolio reviews. And you can schedule yours by heading over to investtalk.com. And please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or our YouTube channel. So head over there and subscribe. And don't forget to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.